మానపు చెప్పునారన్మ దుకాళమశాశ్వతం నాప్లవాంతి మహాత్మానా సంసరీం పరమాం గత. After attaining me, the great souls who are yogis in devotion never return to this temporary world, which is full of miseries, because they have attained the highest perfection. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Since this temporary material world is full of the miseries of birth, old age, disease, and death, naturally he who achieves the highest perfection and attains the supreme planet, Krishna Loka, Goloka Vrindavan, does not wish to return. The supreme planet is described in Vedic literatures as Avyakta, Akshara, and Paramagati. In other words, the planet is beyond our material vision, and it is inexplicable. But it is the highest goal, the destination for the Mahatmas, or great souls. The Mahatmas receive transcendental messages from the realized devotees, and thus gradually develop devotional service in Krishna consciousness. It becomes so absorbed in transcendental service that they no longer desire elevation to any of the material planets, nor do they even want to be transferred to any spiritual planet. They only want Krishna and Krishna's association and nothing else. That is the highest perfection of life. This verse specifically mentions the personalist devotees of the Supreme Lord Krishna. These devotees in Krishna consciousness achieve the highest perfection of life. In other words, they are the supreme souls. We are reading this evening from the 15th chapter. I'm sorry, the 15th verse of the 8th chapter of Sri Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna is explaining the highest perfection of life. When we are talking Krishna, we mean the one supreme God of all living beings, the Father of all who exist in all species of life, the source of everything. The Absolute Truth goes by many names, according to time, place of a particular religious system that is manifested on earth. But the Absolute Truth of God is one. And that Absolute Truth has three features: Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. His impersonal energy that is spread everywhere throughout creation. His presence within the heart of every living being as the witness of all of our words, activities, and thoughts. And Bhagavan, the all-beautiful, all-merciful person who resides in the supreme spiritual world, that place which is beyond any of the limitations of material existence. And it is that to achieve eternal association with that Lord in the spiritual world is the ultimate perfection of life. This world, due to its temporary nature, is always full of uncertainties. Just like we were discussing earlier this afternoon, at any moment, anything can happen. Just walking down the street, driving in the car, just sitting where we are now. Last time I was giving a lecture here, I was just sitting, and two pigeons responded to nature's call on my head, on my... I was just sitting trying to speak Bhagavad Gita. So we do not know what will happen at any moment. Someone can drop something. Someone was telling us he was eating an apple and he took out the apple and his teeth were in the apple. Least expected things can happen at any moment. So that is the nature of the world. There can be earthquake and Latur near Kilari. Just a few years ago, people went to sleep like any night, but they never woke up. There was earthquake, 12,000 people killed within a matter of seconds, and so many tens and thousands homeless without their relatives. So this is a world where we should expect the unexpected. We should not expect the expected. But it is described in Bhagavad Gita how to live within this world and keep our connection to the world beyond this. The example is a lotus flower. A lotus flower grows in a pond of water. The water may be very crystal clean. The water may be filthy, dirty with pollution. But the lotus flower and the lotus leaf is unaffected because its roots are in the soil below the sea or below the waters. And therefore, it is never touched by any type of water. It is always above, always pure and clean. In the Bible, it is said we should be in this world, but not of this world. Because in this world, there is so much greed, envy, lust, anger, pride, illusion. It is all around us. And as society progresses, these lower instincts of human nature are growing more and more and more. In this little city of Bombay, just when I first came here in 1971, it was not so very polluted. There was not much traffic. It was a relatively safe place. But now, as the years are going on, so much pollution, so much congestion, more and more dangers. Why is that? Because the inner content of human consciousness is becoming more and more influenced by these lower qualities, which are based on the selfish desire to exploit another for the purpose of my own gain. As it is said, is a dog-eat-dog world, survival of the fittest. These sayings do not pertain to people who have godly hearts, who have compassion. A pure heart is selfless, willing to make sacrifice for the betterment of others, always honest and clean, trying to express love of God and love of all living beings through our every word, our every thought, and our every action. However, a polluted heart is thinking so much, do anything, say anything to somehow or other suit my particular purpose and fulfill my goals. So the lotus flower can be in a world where there are so many transient changes, danger at every step, danger at every bite, danger everywhere, and at the same time remain completely peaceful, completely fixed in a spirit of devotion. How is that possible? It appears to be impossible. It is only possible not by just a mental adjustment. It is possible when we experience a higher reality within our very life. Not just talk about a higher reality, but have direct connection and perception to that higher reality. Then a transformation of consciousness and a transformation of heart takes place. That is the highest virtue and greatest goal of human existence, to achieve that. And that is the purpose of religion. However, when we forget the purpose of religion, it becomes a ritual or formality, or simply a social identification. Then that connection to the source of consciousness, or God, Krishna, cannot be attained. So real religion is meant to be based on knowledge. Knowledge of who we are. Are we this body? This body is ever-changing. At one time we were little baby children. Some of us are now little grown-up children. Others are at the flower of their youth. And for others, the flower is getting old. And for others, the flowers are wilting quite a bit. So the body is always changing, like the flower. It cannot last. It is human nature. I mean, it is the law of nature. But the consciousness remains the same. Through all the different experiences of the changing of the bodies, we still remember what I was doing when I was young, how I was living when I was young. And we still want to do those things, but we cannot, simply because we have a different body. But the soul, the consciousness, the person is the same. This is the fundamental spiritual truth, to understand who we are. This body is a temporary place of residence. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is compared to a set of clothes. We have it for some time, we use it for some time, and at a certain stage, when it is no longer usable, we have to accept another set of clothes. This is called the transmigration of the soul. And what we do in this life, what our consciousness and our desires that are developed in this life, determine where the soul will be transported after the inevitable departure from this temporary body. The body is desiring to eat, to sleep, to defend, to mate, procreate. These are natural instincts of the body. And there are innumerable categories within these basic titles. However, what is the need of the soul? That is perhaps the most important question in all life. Human civilization is a civilization of questions and answers. When we go to school to be educated, there are so many questions and answers to those questions. When we read the newspaper, when we read a book, when we go to our offices or our wherever, when we come home, it's a series of questions and answers in our life. Questions are automatically coming and must be answered. When you have to go to the bathroom, you're asking, where is the bathroom? You have to have an answer. When you have to go to sleep, where is the place I will sleep? You have to have an answer. Where will I eat? How will I eat? What will I eat? How will we enjoy? What will we do? Where will we go? How will we do it? But the most important question is, who am I? What is my relationship to this body? What is my relationship with God? What is real happiness? How to overcome suffering? These are the eternal questions that have been sought to answer by great personalities from the beginning of time. Thus, the Supreme Lord himself descends into this world time and time again to give the actual authorized answers to these questions. Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, Paritranaya sarunam vinashaya cha duskritam dharma samstapa naradaya sambhavami yuge yuge yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyuta nam dharmasya tadatma nam srijamyaham. That again and again in every millennium I descend into this world to give transcendental knowledge, to reveal myself, to protect the innocent, to annihilate illusion and those who propound illusion. So, according to this sloka from Gita, we can understand the basic principle of our religions is one, to understand our relationship with God and utilize the resources of this existence in harmony with that relationship. This body is a temporary vehicle. A vehicle is meant to take you to a place. A vehicle is not simply meant to sit in for the sake of sitting in. The vehicle is given oil, it is given petrol or gasoline, it is given the tune-up. When it is broken up, it is given repair. We will take so nice care of our vehicle with the hope that it will bring us to our destination. So similarly, this body should be taken best possible care of. Proper foods, proper rest, proper exercise, proper medical attention when required, so that it is suitable to bring us to our destination in life. That destination is to realize the reality or the truth of our true existence. Therefore, Krishna is explaining in this particular verse that those great saintly persons who are yogis in devotion, they fix their consciousness always on what is eternal. And their activities within the phenomenal or temporary world should be done with all responsibility and expertise, but the purpose should be for the service of God or the service of the eternal truth. And that is called bhakti. That is real spirituality. Krishna is the absolute truth, the all-attractive, all-merciful Supreme Lord. It is explained in Gita, Patram Pushpam Palam Toyam, that Krishna as a person accepts our offerings, however big or small they will be, if they are offered with sincere devotion. If Krishna is pleased to accept our offering, then our life is perfect. Why? Because he will reciprocate by giving us himself. In this regard, there is a simple and beautiful story. When Krishna descended into this world just 5,000 years ago, he played as a little boy in Vrindavan. If you remember, those of you who came on the yatra to Vrindavan, we went to Mahavan. This beautiful land of Gokul is where Krishna performed his childhood pastimes. From his birth until he was 3 years and 4 months old, he resided. And it is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam how at one time when he was a little boy, he used to see how his mother would go shopping. Yashoda would go shopping. In those days, there was no currency as we know it. But rather, in Vrindavan, they would barter. A very simple, natural way of shopping. You have something that you grow, and somebody else has something that they grow, and you exchange. So Krishna was born in a family of cowherd men and cowherd ladies. And with the cows, so much milk would come. With the oxen, they would till the fields. And from the fields would come many grains, fruits, vegetables, to sustain one's life, very simply. So his mother would barter. Whatever she wanted to get, she would exchange with some grains. One day, a lady came to Vrindavan, and she had a basket of fruits. She called out, "Does anyone want to buy fruits from me? I have nice fruits." So Krishna saw this lady and understood her heart, that she was a very good soul. Krishna doesn't want fruits. He doesn't require fruits. He wants love. And the fruit is just a means to express that love. Krishna does not need anything we have. But whatever little way we can express our devotion, he accepts that as the most valuable thing in all of creation. Krishna came and he filled his hands with grains, went running to this fruit vendor and said, "I want to buy some fruit from you. Please give me some fruits. Here is the price." But as he was running, because he had such small childlike hands, the grains fell from between his fingers. By the time he got there, there was only hardly one or two little pieces of grain there. And he held it up. "Please give me fruit." The fruit vendor looked at this little child who was so beautiful, who was smiling upon her so charmingly, that she said, "I will give you as many fruits as you want." She filled his arms and hands with as many fruits as he could hold. He smilingly ran off, very happy. Captivated by the beauty of this child, she was completely satisfied to give everything she could to him. The more he could accept, the happier she would be. This is devotion. She was not expecting anything in return. She simply wanted to give. She didn't care anything about her own personal condition. She simply wanted to make this little child happy as he could be. And his smile was more than any price that any currency or any other commodity could have possibly compared to. Because she offered with love and devotion to Krishna, even though she didn't even know that he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, she just thought he was the most beautiful child she had ever seen. When she turned around, her entire fruit basket was filled with the most precious jewels, pearls, rubies, diamonds, emeralds. Great, great fortune. But that wasn't the real wealth that she attained. She attained the wealth of Krishna Prema, of love of God. because the jewels, the rubies, the diamonds, the emeralds and pearls, they cannot really make the heart happy. They can decorate the body, but not the heart, not the soul. There are so many people who have so much, but their hearts are empty. They're lonely, they're frustrated. Real wealth is love. To actually feel love and to feel loved, that is wealth. Even in this world, that is the greatest wealth. One famous singer of the West, he sang that I used to want a nice car, now I have best car. I used to want nice house, now I have the best house. I used to want beautiful ladies, now I have the most beautiful ladies. I used to want fame and distinction, now I have so much fame and distinction. The list went on of all he wanted and all he achieved by becoming very famous. But at the end of each line he said, I'd give it all up for a little peace of mind. I would trade it all if I could just find some peace in my heart. Because the fire of material desire can never be quenched by any attainments or adjustments of this world. So what was the real wealth that this simple lady fruit vendor achieved? The jewels she had may make her very comfortable and somewhat happy in this world, but it won't give real peace. And sooner or later, at the time of inevitable death, it is all taken away. There's not really that much difference between a small child and an old person. It's just a matter of a little time. Everyone has to reach the destination. If you read in our history books, there are so many personalities, but where are they now? Whether they're scholars, philosophers, musicians, politicians, entertainers, whatever they may be, in the end, all that's left is a list of names. And you're not that name. So therefore, all that we see is temporary. But this fruit vendor, she achieved the ultimate jewel. The jewel of love for God, love for Krishna, the ultimate fulfillment of the heart, which is beyond time, which nourishes the very soul and cannot be disturbed or interrupted by any situation in this world or even death itself. It is explained in Bhagavad Gita, Antakali chamameva smaran maktva kalevaram. One who remembers me with love in this life achieves the highest bliss. One who remembers me with love at the time of death achieves my ultimate abode. Now some people may think that how do we know? But this is the word of the holy scriptures, all the great scriptures throughout history. This is one thing they all have in common, that if we remember and love God and serve God, that the destination of his eternal association is guaranteed. And so many great, great personalities throughout history, by their own realizations and the qualities of their life, have testified to this experience to confirm the truth of the Holy Scriptures. When we remember Krishna in our life and when we remember Krishna at the time of death, we are always with Krishna. We achieve realization of the eternal nature that is the very essence of our being. So how to keep our consciousness connected? how to be like this fruit vendor. She became like a lotus flower. By the jewel of love of God she received within her heart, by just giving what she had with nothing in expectation in return for the pleasure of Krishna, of God, what she received in return. Thing hundreds, millions of times greater. What do we gain? We gain Krishna, the source of all beauty, all strength, all knowledge, all fame, all wealth, all renunciation. Krishna, who is the ultimate object of love for every soul. We are looking for that ultimate object of love throughout our life. This place, in this thing, in this person. But Krishna explains in Gita, whatever beautiful and lovable things that attract us in this world, it is only a tiny spark of my splendor. It is only a fraction of the manifestation of Krishna's energy. Krishna is the complete whole. And when the soul comes in contact again with Krishna through the present body and mind that we have, then anandam budivardhanam pratipatam punamrita ashvadanam. Our true desires are completely fulfilled. The pleasure that we're longing for and hankering for is completely satisfied. In this age of Kali, the Supreme Lord descends in the most accessible way in the form of his holy name. In all the great religions of the world, the name of God is considered most holy and sacred. In the Brihad Naradiya Purana, it is explained, Harinama, Harinama, Harinama eva kevalam, kalo nasteva, nasteva, nasteva gatyaranyata. That the ultimate perfection of liberation comes through purifying our heart by chanting the holy names. And this was Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's most principal and merciful teaching. Krishna descends himself as Lord Chaitanya in this age to teach us this universal religious principle. Nam namukari bahudani ca sarva shakti sthatrapitani amita smarinena kala ethadrishi tava kripa bhagavan mamapi duradaivam idrishami hajaninanuragaha. That my Lord, simply by chanting your holy names one can become completely purified. You have invested all your powers, all your beauty, all your mercy within your name. And you have many, many names that are manifested in various religions at different times throughout history. Rama, Narasimha, Allah, Jehovah, Krishna, Madhusudan, Govinda, Gopinath. And by chanting these names, one can have direct association with you. Chetodarapanamarajanam bhavamahadavagni nirvapanam. What we associate with, we become like that. That is a common understanding, and it is a law of nature. What we associate with, we take on those qualities. One of the greatest worries of a mother is who my child is associating with. If the child is associating with drug addicts and thieves, then the mother and father are very much worried. What will happen to my child? Tonight my mother and father are here as special guests. We have invited them to come all the way from the United States. And I remember how they used to worry about me
what I would do, who would I would associate with. When I had nice friends, they were so happy. And if I had friends that were not so nice, they were so worried. Why are you with this person? I don't trust this person. Do you remember? I would usually select the friends that they didn't like. Because that is what young people like to do. They like to be adventurous. However, by their prayers, somehow or other, I survived. But association is so vital, so important. If you associate with a prostitute, you will become like a prostitute. If you associate with people smoking all the time, it will be very difficult, especially young people, to not start smoking, drinking, taking drugs, even in the West. Practically all the vices that people do, it's not because they want to do it. It's because of the peer pressure. Due to that association, we feel we have to do it. We will not be accepted if we don't do it. Is that correct? We have to be accepted by the society of people around us. But there are different types of societies of people around us. If the society we choose are doing all sorts of these dangerous activities, then the more dangerous our activities are, the more we become very respected, like a hero. And people say, oh, you are very good. If you're in the association of devotees, the more humble you are, the more you want to serve, the more pure you are, the more people will think you're a hero. So who we associate with is so important because we take on those qualities. Today, in the cinemas, on the televisions, there's so much violence. And little children are just associating with this violence and they become violent. There are cases recently where little children shoot each other and kill each other with guns. Yes? Where did you learn this? I saw it on television. This is what they do. They shoot people with guns and they kill people. And it's considered such an exciting, nice thing. So association very much determines our whole life. God is in his name. If we associate with Krishna, who is all pure, we become purified. If we associate with Krishna, who is Satchidananda, who is eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss, then we become naturally realized that we are eternal. By associating with Krishna, we become full of knowledge. And we become full of unlimited, unending happiness. Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, one of our great spiritual predecessors, he was by material standards illiterate. He could not read, he could not write. But he did one thing. He was constantly chanting the name of Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. Because of this chanting, and because he was hearing the message of Krishna from the Srimad Bhagavat, Bhagavad Gita, he had all knowledge. Any question on anything in life that was essential, he could answer perfectly. He could cite from the greatest of the scriptures perfectly, simply by chanting the holy names. All knowledge was revealed to him. In fact, the greatest scholar of the time, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, greatest scholar, he was known as the human encyclopedia. anything he read on any subject, he would never, ever forget. Such a scholar. When he would give lectures, and anyone wanted to debate or argue with him, it was just a matter of moments till they were utterly defeated. Even the greatest pundits or scholars or philosophers, if they had opposing views, they could not stand before him. People who had misconceptions on philosophy and religion and were propagating it, when they would see him walking down the street, they would run away as one would run from a lion. Even when he was a small boy. This is what kind of scholar he was. Yet he accepted initiation and accepted as his eternal father and spiritual teacher, Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, who could not read or write. But he accepted him as the reservoir of all knowledge. Where did he get that knowledge from? From purely chanting the holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Because the name of God is none different than God himself. It contains all knowledge and all bliss, all happiness. Everyone is seeking happiness in every aspect of our life. Our goal is ultimately happiness. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Anandam Buddhivaradanam Pratipatam Punamrata Ashvadanam. That happiness can easily be achieved when we offenselessly, sincerely purify our hearts through the chanting of God's name. But in order to chant the name of God properly, we must live a very honest and pure life. A life according to the highest principles of honesty and morality. We have to live a selfless life, not an exploitative life, but a life dedicated to service to God, to service to all living beings. That quality, in conjunction with the sincere and regular chanting of the name of the Lord, will awaken the mercy of God within our hearts. And then what that fruit vendor achieved, we can also achieve. The jewel of Krishna Prema, love of God. The jewel of eternal realization of our soul beyond birth, old age, disease, and death. Beyond all the limitations of this cosmic manifestation. It is the inherent right of everyone to experience this bliss. It is not meant simply for a selected few. It is within us. It simply must be uncovered. And the chanting of God's name is the process of uncovering that great jewel of spiritual experience. And it is for this reason we have all gathered tonight, to help encourage and inspire each other for this. We're very, very grateful to Kamala Prabhu, Madhupriya Mate. What is it used for? It's just a place people walk. But they have decorated it so beautifully. They have cooked such a wonderful feast. It's almost a full moon decorating the sky. It's a very, very beautiful night to gather together. So we're very grateful for them, this wonderful service. They worked so hard, made so many efforts just to make all of us happy tonight here. It's a beautiful service. It's the ultimate perfection of whatever we have, to use it to make others happy. And the greatest happiness is to use it to bring people together, to remember God, to glorify God, and to experience the spiritual joy of that process. It is also a special night because, for myself, that my very dear mother and father have come over 10,000 miles. They just arrived yesterday. Because 10 years ago they came to Bombay and they had such a great, great affection and respect for all the devotees here that it was a great longing in their heart to return to meet with all of you and to share their affection with all of you. And what is that affection? The affection that you see in all of these people is their love for Krishna. Because of their simple and natural devotion to Krishna, naturally such simple and natural good qualities awaken in people's lives. Actually, if you go to many places in India, you'll find many varieties of people. But these people, because they are living in a spirit of devotion to Krishna, they're associating with Krishna by chanting his name. So many of Krishna's qualities, which are all attractive, are manifesting through them. They naturally become kind, compassionate, respectful, honest, very pure in their lifestyle, very appreciative of others' good qualities. This is the nature of a heart that is being cleansed. So the affection that we exchange is really the affection of the beauty of God that we are sharing with one another. And the more we live a Krishna conscious life, the more the beauty of Krishna can shine through us, bring light where there is darkness, bring hope where there is hopelessness, bring happiness where there is suffering. That is the nature of Krishna. And it is this goal of manifesting Krishna from our own lives that will be the greatest service that we can offer to the world. So my mother and father have come to experience Krishna through all of you. And I think you are quite happy experiencing Krishna through all of them. And they have given me so much. We explained last night. If anyone would like to hear the tape, you can hear the tape. But I owe a great debt to them. They have tolerated great, great sufferings due to my renouncing so many things of this world to live a God-conscious life. But they were always so very understanding and supportive. I will give one example. I took sannyas. How many of you parents would like your child to take sannyas? Anyways, one time my father called New Vrindavan and he said, "Is Radhanath in?" And they said, "Oh, you mean Radhanath Swami?" Do you remember this phone call? I wasn't there at the time. He said, "What did you call him?" He said, "Radhanath Swami? You didn't hear? He's a Swami now. He took sannyas." In Western culture, no one knows what Swami or sannyas is. He said, "What does that mean?" He said, "That means he has renounced the world completely. It means that he can never marry, he can never have a girlfriend, he can never have children. means he can never get a job. It means socially he's a dead man. And then the person said, I would like to congratulate you that your son has done like this. And my poor father was completely silent. And the person who answered the phone said, Mr. Slavin, you don't sound very happy about this. He said, no, I'm not happy at all. And then a few days later, he called somewhere where I happened to be, and he said, Radhanath, how are you? I said, I'm fine. He said, what's new? I said, nothing. He said, what do you mean, nothing? I said, I'm just doing the same thing. He said, I heard that you're not allowed to get married, you're not allowed to have children, you're not allowed to have a job, you're socially a dead man. That's what they told me. You're a Swami. I said, yes, yes, that's also true. But don't worry, I'm the same. It's just an adjustment. So these, for a person from America who has no understanding of these things, and of course this news also came to my mother, and you know, every mother and father want children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren. So, certainly, I caused great pain to their hearts. And I was always aware of the pain they were suffering. And I never wanted to cause, but at the same time, when the call for God comes in one's heart, when God beckons one, come, then one must obey that call. And by doing so, trying to make these sacrifices, I have been given the honor of serving all of you. And one of my great joys is not only do I have the great honor of serving all of you, but by your kindness and your good qualities, now my mother and father are very proud of my life. And this is something that is very special and meaningful to me also. So I would like to thank you for giving me this great joy to see that whatever I have done and all I've put you through, in the end you can smile and say thank you. And I also would like to smile and say thank you. Thank you.